Chapter 16. They were, or were not, let into the secret. If this confusion of languages, or interest, lost them the real design, it cannot be a wonder. Have we not always seen it in our world, that dividing an interest, weakens and exposes it? Has not a great many both good and bad designs been rendered abortive in this our lower world, for want of the harmony of parties, and the unanimity of those concerned in the design? How had the knot of rebellion been dissolved in England, if it had not been untied by the very hands of those that knit it? All the contrary force had been entirely broken and subdued, and the restoration of monarchy had never happened in England, if union and agreement had been found among the managers of that age. The enemies of the present establishment have shown sufficiently that they perfectly understand the shortest way to our infallible destruction, when they bend their principal force at dividing us into parties, and keeping those parties at the utmost variance. But this is not all. The author of this cannot but observe here that as England is unhappily divided among parties, so it has this one felicity, even to be found in the very matter of her misfortunes, that those parties are all again subdivided among themselves. How easily might the church have crushed and subdued the dissenters, if they had been all as mad as one party, if they had not been some high and some low churchmen? And what mischief might not that one party have done in this nation, had not they been divided again into jurand, Jacobites and non-jurand, into consolidators and non-consolidators? From whence 'tis plain to me, that just as it is in the moon these consolidating churchmen are mere confederates with the Whigs, and it must be so, unless we should suppose them mere madmen, that don't know what they are a-doing, and who are the drudges of their enemies, and know nothing of the matter. And from this lunar observation it presently occurred to my understanding, that my masters the dissenters may come in for a share among the moon-blind men of this generation, since had they done for their own interest what the laws fairly admits to be done, had they been united among themselves, had they formed themselves into a politic body, to have acted in a public, united capacity by general concert, and as persons that had but one interest and understood it, they had never been so often insulted by every rising party, they had never had so many machines and intrigues to ruin and suppress them, they had never been so often attacked and consolidated to oppression and persecution, and yet never have rebelled, or broke the peace, incurred the displeasure of their princes, or have been upbraided with plots, insurrections, and anti-monarchical principles. When they had made treaties and capitulations with the church for temper and toleration, the articles would have been kept, and these would have demanded justice with an authority that would upon all occasions be respected. Were they united in civil polity in trade and interest, would they buy and sell with one another, abstract their stocks, erect banks and companies in trade of their own, lend their cash to the government in a body, and as a body? If I were to tell them what advantages the Crowleans in the moon make of this sort of management, how the government finds it their interest to treat them civilly, and use them like subjects of consideration, how upon all occasions some of the grandees and nobility appear as protectors of the Crowleans, and treat with their princes in their names, present their petitions, and make demands from the prince of such loans and sums of money as the public occasions require, and what abundance of advantages are reaped from such a union, both to their own body as a party, and to the government also they would be convicted. Wherefore I cannot but very earnestly desire of the dissenters and Whigs in my own country that they would take a journey in my consolidator up to the moon. They would certainly see there what vast advantages they lose for want of a spirit of union and a concert of measures among themselves. The Crowleans in the moon are men of large souls and generously stand by one another on all occasions. It was never known that they deserted anybody that suffered for them. My old philosopher accepted, and that was a surprise upon them. The reason of the difference is plain. Our dissenters here have not the advantage of a cogitator, or thinking engine, as they have in the moon. We have the elevator here, and are lifted up pretty much, but in the moon they always go into the thinking engine upon every emergency, and in this, they outdo us of this world on every occasion. In general, therefore, I must note that the wisest men I found in the moon, when they understood the notes I had made as above, of the subdivisions of our parties, told me that it was the greatest happiness that could have been obtained to our country, for that if our parties had not been thus divided, the nation had been undone. They own it that had not their Salianarian party been divided among themselves, the Crolians had been undone, and all the moon had been involved in persecution, and been very probably subjected to the Gallienarian monarch. Thus the fatal errors of men have their advantages. The separate ends they serve are not foreseen by their authors, and they do good against the very design of the people, and the nature of the evil itself. And now that I may encourage our people to that peace and good understanding among themselves, which can alone produce their safety and deliverance, I shall give a brief account how the Crolians in the moon came to open their eyes to their own interest, how they came to unite, and how the fruits of that union secured them from ever being insulted again by the Salianarian party, who in time gave over the vain and fruitless attempt, and so a universal lunar calm has spread the whole moon ever since. If our people will not listen to their own advantages, nor do their own business, let them take the consequences to themselves. They cannot blame the man in the moon. To endeavor to bring this to pass, as these memoirs have run through the general history of the feuds and unhappy breaches between the Salianarian Church and the Crolian dissenters in the world of the moon, it would seem an imperfect and abrupt relation if I should not tell you how, and by what method, so long hid from their eyes, the Crolians came to understand their own interest and know their own strength. 'Tis true, it seemed a wonder to me, when I considered the excellence and variety of those perspective glasses I have mentioned, the clearness of the air, and consequently of the head, in this lunar world. I say it was very strange the Crolians should have been moon-blind so long as they were, that they could not see it was always in their power, if they had but pursued their own interest, and made use of those legal opportunities which lay before them, to put themselves in a posture, as that the government itself should think them a body too big to be insulted, and find it their interest to keep measures with them. It was indeed a long time before they opened their eyes to these advantages, but bore the insults of the hare-brained party with a weakness and negligence that was as unjustifiable in them as unaccountable to all the nations of the moon. But at last, as all violent extremes rouse their contrary extremities, the folly and extravagance of the high Salianarians drove the Crolians into their senses, and roused them to their own interest. The occasion was among a great many others as follows. The eager Salianarian could not on all occasions forbear to show their deep regret at the dissenting Crolians enjoying the toleration of their religion by a law. And when all their legal attempts to lessen that liberty had proved abortive, her Salianarian Majesty on all occasions repeating her assurances of the continuance of her protection, and particularly the maintaining this toleration inviolable, they proceeded then to show the remains of their malice in little insults, mean and illegal methods, and continual private disturbances upon particular persons, in which, however, the Crolians having recourse to the law, always found justice on their side, and had redress with advantage, of which the following instance is more than ordinarily remarkable. There had been a law made by the men of the feather, that all the meaner idle sort of people, who had no settled way of living should go to the wars, and the Lasagnians, a sort of magistrates there, in the nature of our justices of the peace, were to send them away by force. Now it happened in a certain Salinarian island, that for want of a better, one of their high priests was put into the civil administration, and made a Lasagnian. In the neighborhood of this man's jurisdiction, one of their own Salinarian priests had turned Crolian, and whether he had a better talent at performance, or rather was more diligent in his office, is not material, but he set up a kind of a Crolian temple in an old barn, or some such mechanic building, and all the people flocked after him. This so provoked his neighbors of the Black Girdle, an order of priests, of which he had been one, that they resolved to suppress him let it cost what it would. They run strange lengths to bring this to pass. They forget strange stories of him, defamate him, run him into jail upon frivolous and groundless occasions, represented him as a monster of a man, told their story so plain, and made it so specious, that even the Crolians themselves, to their shame, believed it, and took up prejudices against the poor man, which had like to hob in his ruin. They proscribed him in print for crimes they could never prove. They branded him with forgery, adultery, drunkenness, swearing, breaking jail, and abundance of crimes. But when matters were examined and things came to the test, they could never prove the least thing upon him. In this manner, however, they continually worried the poor man, till they ruined his family and reduced him to beggary, and though he came out of the prison they cast him into by the mere force of innocence, yet they never left pursuing him with all sorts of violence. At last they made use of their brother of the girdle, who was in commission as above, and this man being high priest and Lasonian too, by the first was a party, and by the last, had a power to act the tragedy they had plotted against the poor man. In short, they seized him without any crime alleged, took violently from him his license, as a Crolian priest, by which the law justified what he had done, pretending it was forged, and after very ill-treating him, condemned him to the wars, delivers him up for a soldier, and accordingly carried him away. But it happened, to their great mortification, that this man found more mercy from the men of the sword, than from those of the word, and so found means, to get out of their hands, and afterwards to undeceive all the moon, both as to his own character, and as to what he had suffered. For some of the Crolians, who began to be made sensible of the injury done the poor man, advised him to have recourse to the law, and to bring his adversaries before the criminal bar. But as soon as this was done, good God! What a scene of villainy was here opened! The poor man brought up such a cloud of witnesses, to confront every article of their charge, and to vindicate his own character, that when the very judges heard it, though they were all Salinarians themselves, they held up their hands, and declared in open court it was the deepest track of villainy that ever came before them, and that the actors ought to be made examples to all the moon. The persons concerned, as at all possible arts to avoid, or at least to delay the shame, and adjourn the punishment, thinking still to weary the poor man out. But now his brethren the Crolians began to see themselves wounded through his sides, and above all, finding his innocence cleared up beyond all manner of dispute, they espoused his cause, and assisted him to prosecute his enemies, which he did, till he brought them all to justice, exposed them to the last degree, obtained the reparation of all his losses, and a public decree of the judges of his justification and future repose. Indeed, when I saw the proceedings against this poor man run to a height so extravagant and monstrous, when I found malice, forgery, subornation, perjury, and a thousand unjustifiable things which their own sense, if they had any, might hob in their protection against, and which any child in the moon might ha told them must one time or other come upon the stage and expose them, I began to think these people were all in the Crowleyan plot too. For really such proceedings as these were the greatest pieces of service to the Crowleyans as could possibly be done. For as it generally proves in other pluses as well as in the moon, that mischief unjustly contrivet falls upon the head of the authors, and redounds to their treble dishonor, so it was here. The barbarity and inhumane treatment of this man made the sober and honest part even of the Solinarians themselves blush for their brethren, and own that the punishment awarded on them was just. Thus the Crowleyans got crowned by the folly and madness of their enemies, and the very engines and plots laid to injure them served to bring their enemies on the stage, and expose both them and their cause. But this was not all. By these incessant attacks on them as a party, they began to come to their senses out of a 50-year slumber. They found the law on their side, and the government moderate and just. They found they might oppose violence with law, and that when they did fly to the refuge of justice, they always had the better of their enemy. Flushed with this success, it put them upon considering what fools they had been all along to bear the insolence of a few hot-headed men, who contrary to the true intent and meaning of the Queen, or of the government, had resolved their destruction. It put them upon revolving the state of their own case, and comparing it with their enemies, upon examining on what foot they stood, and so establish it upon a firm law, yet a violent party pushing at the overthrow of that establishment, and dissolving the legal right they had to their liberty and religion. It put them upon duly weighing the nearness of their approaching ruin and destruction, and finding things run so hard against them, reflecting upon the extremity of their affairs, and how if they had not drawn in the high church champions, to damn the projects of their own party, by running at such desperate extremes as all men of any temper must of course abhor, they had been undone. Truly now they began to consider, and to consult with one another, what was to be done. Abundance of projects were laid before them, some too dangerous, some too foolish to be put in practice. At last they resolved to consult with my philosopher. He had been but scurvily treated by them in his troubles, and so universally abandoned by the Crowleyans, that even the Solinarians themselves insulted them on that head, and laughed at them for expecting anybody should venture for them again. But he, forgetting their unkindness, asked them what it was they desired of him? They told him, they had heard, that he had reported he could put the Crowleyans in a way, to secure themselves from any possibility of being insulted again by the Solinarians, and yet not disturb the public tranquility, nor break the laws, and they desired him, if he knew such a secret, he would communicate it to them, and they would be sure to remember to forget him for it, as long as he lived. He frankly told them he had said so, and it was true, he could put them in a way to do all this, if they would follow his directions. What's that? Says one of the most earnest inquirers. 'Tis included in one word, says he, unite. This most significant word, deeply and solidly reflected upon, put them upon strange and various conjectures, and many long debates they had with themselves about it. At last they came again to him, and asked him what he meant by it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.